the Bi-State Literary Council today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Today we'll learn about the Bi-State Literary Council from its president, Michael Gibson, on Scribble. That is a term that I think we're all familiar with, the Bi-State Literary Council.
Literacy
Council.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Literacy Council. Okay, I guess I'm not that familiar with the term, am I?
Well, you know, it's one of those phrases you've heard all over, and I've known people on the council, and I've been to a couple of events, but I have no idea who you are or what you do or how you're funded or... So, and I'm sure that's true of a lot of readers.
In my case, what your name is. Okay, Bi-State Literacy Council. Michael, what is it and how does it work?
So we've been around for about 30 years. We're actually celebrating 30 years this coming year. And we cover Rock Island, Henry, Mercer, Muscatine, and Scott counties. We are the first Bi-State Literacy Council in the country to be created. So back several years ago, Barbara Bush started some work around literacy and was encouraging the start of literacy councils. And so we are a piece of that, but because we're a river, we wanted to get people from both sides of the river involved. And so we were the first council that included people from two different states.
Mm-hmm. Well, what exactly do you do?
So what we do is that we have kind of two major functions. We give small mini grants to literacy projects throughout the area. And we also give some small scholarships to non-traditional students to go back and continue their education. So most of the fundraising and activities that we do fund money going into those projects. And we try to look for projects that are very unique, that not just, you know, let's buy this book and get it in the hands of kids, because there are a lot of places that you can get access to books. We work a lot with our local libraries and those kinds of things. But we try to look for some creative ways to increase literacy in the community, whether it's literacy with kids or whether it's literacy with adults.
So is that a private group or is that a government organization?
I would say it's more like an advisory council, kind of, that it started as, and it's turned into its own 501c3, and we do funding of certain organizations.
So just a bunch of local people got together and
people
said, let's have a literacy council?
Yep, people who really felt like that they needed to support literacy activities and help to eradicate illiteracy in the community. People who had that kind of interest all came together. And that's still what it is people from different areas. Some people get involved because of the jobs that they're in. So we have people from, you know, local adult ed college kind of things that are a part of it, people who are involved with it because they're a part of the library. And then we also have volunteers and people who are just interested in it because literacy is something that they have a passion about.
You know, we always assume that everyone can read. And it's surprising when you run into an adult who can't read. And a matter of fact, some adults who can't read are very skillful at disguising that.
That's very true. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
Well, I've read some statistics in about the Quad Cities and what percentage of non-readers there are. It is astounding.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you think there might be one or two hiding out, but you know, do you have any idea how much illiteracy is really around?
I know that like Black Hawk College, for instance, serves about 300 or 400 students a year through their adult ed program. And those are not necessarily students who can't read entirely, but a lot of them are people who can't read at grade level. So that's certainly an issue as well, that perhaps they've learned some basic reading skills, but they can't read at grade level, and that impacts their ability to move forward and get the kinds of jobs that they want and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Because as I say, it is a surprise, but it is a fact of life. You know, people are different. You know, we always, I think, facilely assume that other people are pretty much like us.
Right.
But we aren't. We are a diverse group, and that's what makes the country interesting, is there is no uniformity. But literacy would seem to be something really important. And when you give grants, you say you give small grants. Are they aimed at educating people to read or facilitating the education? How do you rate grants?
So a lot of them are based on their ability to kind of be able to provide some sort of support for that program beyond just the expenditure of that particular year. So we try for it not to be necessarily, like I said, giveaway books, but more things that they can use for long term. So some of the projects that we have done is like we funded a felt storyboard for Friendly House so that they could use that to help build storytelling skills with the preschool age kids that they serve there. And so that's something that will help each group of students that come through there, them having that additional resource. Occasionally it will be things book sets for a book club that's within a school or those kinds of things. We also have done some kind of out-of-the-box things that don't include books. For instance, we had a grant just recently that was funded through this Dyslexia Association that funded the chairs that wobble. Mm-hmm. That helps students that have attention issues to be able to focus on reading if they have a chair like that as opposed to a regular chair that we might use. So we've funded those kinds of things. We also did a project with the RME called Songs Inspired, where we worked with them and some of our local adult ed students in writing songs about their experiences and helping to build their literacy through songwriting. So we've done a lot of kind of different things to look at what are the ways beyond just purchasing a book that you can build people's literacy within the community, like I said, both adults and kids.
A wobble chair is very interesting because I had a grandchild who early in his development had to have some kind of physical activity.
Mm-hmm. To be able to think.
Moving
right.
his yeah. leg and so on in yeah. order to focus. And I know my daughter had to go through quite a hassle
to
arrange this
yeah.
with the school, but she did and it worked. And But you don't think of that.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
what you think of is stop wobbling. You're not
right.
paying attention,
right?
right. And, right. and you don't realize that there are kids that need to wobble to pay attention.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and that's something that simply would never occur to anyone. If you bring in a proposal, I want to fund wobble chairs, they'd
right.
look at you like, what?
Right. right. Yeah, and so we try to think about some of those kind of outside-the-box kind of things. We've also like we kind of brought the idea of little libraries to the area. Now they've kind of popped up everywhere, and they're being funded by a lot of different kinds of things. But I don't know if you guys have seen little libraries.
Right. Yeah.
They sit outside of churches. Sometimes they sit outside of people's houses or community centers or those kinds of things. It looks like kind of an oversized birdhouse.
There are dozens of them around the Quad Cities now.
And a few of those are funded by us, and then they kind of they grew and had a life of their own, and some other places purchased those as well.
So where do you get your money?
So we have worked through Birdies for Charity. We have people that donate regularly through Birdies for Charity. We also do a fundraiser usually in the spring. It's been several different incarnations of things. Most recently, we've done a trivia night. The past 3 or 4 years, we've done a trivia night, and we kind of haven't started the planning for that yet for this upcoming year. Most of our funds come from those two big fundraisers that we do throughout the year. We do also do a recognition breakfast. We recognize people in the community for things that they've done for literacy throughout the year. So we do usually 3 to 5 awards for kind of annually. And then we have what's called a Sister Camille Award, which is named after a longtime member of the Bi-State Literacy Council. And that's kind of a lifetime achievement kind of award that we give.
I'm wondering, how do you or do you have access to statistics on literacy? That would seem to me that would be kind of hard to come by.
There are pieces here and there that you can get. It has a lot to do with who's providing service in a particular area. But a lot, unfortunately, particularly with adult literacy, it's something where, like you said, it's not often it comes from self-reporting, and often adults are not going to self-report that they have that particular concern. You can find statistics around what kids are reading at grade level and those kinds of things. I wish I had brought some of that so I could quote that a little better. But
So is your aim more adult literacy rather than?
It's been a little bit of both, actually. Okay. Yeah. Now with our scholarships, that's specifically towards adult literacy, and it's specifically focused towards people who have been in one of the adult education programs in the community. And that's because we really kind of saw a need that there are a lot of people who – there are a lot of scholarship opportunities to go back to school for people who are coming out of high school, but there are not a lot of scholarship opportunities for those non-traditional students who may have struggled, who may be coming out of like a GED program or that kind of thing. And so we wanted to provide some opportunity for scholarships for that group that really doesn't have a lot of other places to access that kind of help. The other thing with the scholarships that we provide is that we don't require specifically that they be used towards tuition, because we know with non-traditional students there are a lot of roadblocks that they have to going back to school. So, again, they may be able to access financial aid or Pell Grants or those kinds of things to be able to help with their tuition, but it's hard to find money for their books, or it's hard to find money to be able to afford gas back and forth to school or those kinds of things. And so we also try to provide some flexibility with our scholarship money, in that if they can show a need and that they're going back to school, that they can use the money however they need it to best support them in going back
to school. So how did you personally get involved in the – and when in the Bi-State Literacy Council?
So I've been involved for about 4 years. I got involved when I was working with the family literacy program through Black Hawk College. And so kind of initially, like I said, I was one of those people who kind of got involved by nature of the job that I had and that it fit well. Unfortunately, the Family Literacy Program was one of those programs that was kind of a bystander of the Illinois budget impasse. And so they lost funding for that program. And so I've moved on to campus. I'm doing a kind of different job that is not directly as related now, but I'm very lucky in that the job that I have supports me continuing to be involved in this organization that I've really grown to have a heart for.
And can anybody join the Bi-State Literary, or is there a council of X number of members?
We've never really had to cap it necessarily.
Okay.
So
how many?
Currently we have, I think, 11 of us.
Okay.
So there's always room for people to join us. It's not capped at a certain number.
But you don't have to be elected or anything?
we ask that people come to a couple of meetings and then let us know that they're interested in joining the board, and then we vote to add them onto the board. We also do have some subcommittees, so we have some subcommittees that work on giving out the grants, that work on putting together the fundraisers. We have like a PR kind of committee that works on the marketing piece of things.
How often do you meet?
We meet monthly.
Where?
We're currently meeting at the Fairmont Street Library, the Davenport Library on the branch on Fairmont Street. And we meet the third Thursday at 4 o'clock, usually in their book room, but occasionally they'll move us around a little bit. But usually they have a sign up of where we're going to be if they've moved us to a different room.
So if you're interested in promoting literacy, you could go to one of those meetings on the third Thursday at 4 p.m. at the Davenport Fairmont Library.
Absolutely. We'd love to have you, and we can talk a little bit more about what we do and how you might fit into it.
Uh-huh. Are most of the board members in education?
A lot of them are either in education, work for libraries, or have at one point. We also have several retired people who, like retired teachers or those kinds of things, who have decided it's something that they want to do for their volunteer work. We also have a couple members that have been involved with programs like RSVP, those kinds of things. So we kind of have a different kind of spread of members.
We
have a couple of people from like business as well that have.
Serve a broad area. Do your members come from all across the area, or are they pretty localized?
So we work real hard to have them from different areas. We do have a member that is from Henry County right now. We have a member from Muscatine County. But we are always looking for those outlying areas. Because when you meet in the Quad Cities, sometimes it's hard to work in getting people from those outer areas. That's actually one of the reasons we decided to start meeting at the Fairmont Library, is because they have Skype access. And so we're hoping for some of the people in those outlying areas where maybe it's harder for them to drive in on a regular basis, that we can make use of that technology to make it easier for them to participate without having to make the drive all the time.
What are the counties again that you serve?
So it's Rock Island, Henry and Mercer in Illinois, and Muscatine and Scott in Iowa.
Okay. Well, you know, now we know, Roald, about the Literacy Council, and I know the right name.
Well, I'm amazed that you're doing all of this with 11 people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and what the variety of things you do.
You do cover a lot of bases there.
Well, and I think we've done well at kind of coordinating with different organizations that are doing similar work too, so that we can work smarter, not harder. So, you know, we work with Rotary a lot because they have a strong literacy focus. So we've worked with them on different things. Provide regular sponsorship for the Children's Literature Festival. So we kind of support each other. And then there are some groups that have kind of popped up recently that are kind of library focused. There's Davenport Reads, Moline Reads, and Rocktown Reads that are kind of working specifically on addressing literacy and a love for reading within with children or under 18. And so we try to work as strong as we can with those partnerships to make sure that when there is just a few amount of people around the table that we're putting our efforts in the best places and utilizing those other groups' energy when we can as well.
Is literacy a growing problem? I mean, or has it always been?
I think it's always been an issue. I don't know that it's specifically growing right now. But I think it's always been that kind of underlying issue of when people are struggling either by nature of being in poverty, or people are struggling by nature of having some sort of developmental delay, or the number of things that kind of create those issues where you get behind on reading in school and don't catch back up. I think all of those factors are hard to fix all at the same time. And so it's always going to be an issue. It's just a matter of, like, are we seeing it in our community and are we doing our best to address it when we can?
Well, I certainly think you've chosen something important to do with your time, and I applaud the efforts of the Literacy Council. And I want to thank you for helping me get the name right,
sure.
And for explaining what to work. As I say, it's a term we've heard, and it's nice to know there are people involved in it. And Michael Gibson is president of the group. We wish you our best, and thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Literacy Council. Literacy, not literary.
Yes.
I am so slow sometimes. It's one letter. Oh, dear. But Literacy Council, we don't – it is always amazing to find that there are many illiterate people still in this country.
It is incredible.
Yeah. And around the world, of course, literacy is an even more – imposing problem. When I read back in the past, illiterate people and how they managed in the Middle Ages and so on when hardly anybody was literate.
Right.
It's incredible. And they went from a highly literate society in Rome,
right,
when all that collapsed, so did literacy.
Right. Well, I'm amazed that a group this informal that has no government backing or formal contract or anything can keep going. Groups are having a tough time going these days.
That's
membership
true.
In almost every group is slowly dropping,
yeah,
from churches on down.
That is a function of how society is organized. I've been tiresome on this, but as I read back in the past in history, go back 1,000 years or even 500, people perceived themselves more as a part of an organization than they did as individuals.
Well, the average Victorian family, I think I read someplace, had about, with all the aunts, uncles, cousins, second cousins, third cousins, had about 3,000, a community of about 3,000 people,
yeah,
that they could depend on.
That's right. And that's an old instinctive thing. We're going through that now, talking about tribal politics. That if you appeal to people's instinct, then they fall back on tribalism.
Right.
People who are in my family or my neighborhood,
right,
or look like me and talk,
right,
like me and so on. And but we are evolving. Humans evolve as other creatures do, but we evolve very, very slowly. But it seems to me there's been a steady move toward highly individual people,
right.
People that are conscious more themselves as an entity than they are as a member of the community.
Well, there was, about 30 years ago, there was a book. I know Swanee was really hot on a book called Bowling Alone.
Yeah, that's
about
right.
About how, you know, group activities are...
I remember reading that book.
Yeah.
And the question then is, if that is the case, where people are sharply accented individuals, how do we form a society?
I don't think you can.
There's got to be a way or we'll kill each other.
Well, that could happen.
And we are. We're starting to fall apart because we don't. And I think that's what drives us back to this instinctive level, because we are under great stress. People don't realize how stressful it is when you're living in this world, in this modern world, and you find safety, you find refuge in falling back to some simple group,
right,
and then excluding others. But it's not going to work that way. The world will fall apart if we can't find a way for different people to get along, to cooperate, to live together. And we're going through a really tough patch right now. I don't know how it turns out, because we really could do ourselves a ton of damage if we don't get this worked out.
Well, if the psychologist Jung, the guy that believed in collective unconscious, is right, whenever society is about to go off the deep end of the one end of the road or the other, right or left, a writer will be called to set things right. You know, it was Jung that said about Goethe, it wasn't Goethe who wrote Faust, it was Faust who wrote Goethe.
But, you know, writing a book, is that going to do it?
Well, it does it, right? I mean, there are books that call us back, you know, but even that isn't working as well as it used to, right?
No, because books aren't at the center of things now.
Right.
I know walking into Crocs and Bertano's the other day, I thought my spirits lifted because I was one of about 8 people going in. I thought, wonderful, wonderful.
Where did you walk into Crocs and Bertano?
Oh, that's right. Pardon, Barnes & Noble. Talk about living in the past.
Right.
That was...
Oh, I would love to walk again into Crocs and Brentano.
Oh, yeah. We used to, every Saturday, every other Saturday, we'd go to Chicago, go to Crocs and Brentano, Rose Records, the Berghoff,
right,
and then the Chicago
right.
Symphony,
yep.
And then come home.
Right.
And to me, that was living high on the hog. But Crocs and Brentano's, I'll never forget that place. I love to dive down into the basement, but also to rise up to the art and architecture section. But there are bookstores proliferating now, used books as well as the regular featured places. But literacy. Now, we've used all our time today talking about literacy. Keep reading. And think about joining me, Don Wooten, and Roel Tweet next week when we'll return for another bout on Scribble.